We continue now with our report on how last year's terrorist attacks changed the Bush administration's view of the world. September 11th did not alter the fundamental attitudes of the administration, but as NPR's Mike Schuster reports, it did sharpen the resolve of the president and his team to pursue their goals.
In May, President Bush traveled to Russia for 3 days of festivities that included a boat ride on the Neva River in St. Petersburg and a visit to the ballet. The centerpiece of the summit was the Moscow Treaty, an agreement to reduce deployed strategic nuclear warheads in the U.S. and Russia to about 2,000 over the next 10 years. Initially, President Bush did not want another arms control treaty with Russia. When he relented, administration negotiators dictated nearly all the terms of this treaty, which has no timetable for staged reductions in nuclear weapons, places no restrictions on either nation as to how its nuclear forces will be structured, and allows both sides to keep thousands of nuclear warheads taken off of missiles and bombers in active reserve. While welcoming the reduction, Senator Joe Biden is still wondering why the Bush administration wants to keep so many nuclear weapons in this new era of partnership with Moscow.
If Russia's not the enemy any longer, then where else are the targets? I mean, who is all of a sudden going to leap up and require us to take out of storage up to 4,000 nuclear warheads, redeploy them, and be able to fire them? I think it's difficult to justify.
Bush administration officials have been questioned often on this point, and they generally avoid concrete answers. The Bush team simply says it wants to be ready for any surprises. But that does not explain why the Bush administration wants to retain so many nuclear warheads. The answer may be found in some remarks from Defense Secretary Rumsfeld in that speech at the National Defense University in Washington last January.
Our goal is not simply to fight and win wars. It is to try to prevent wars. To do so, we need to find ways to influence the decision makers of potential adversaries, to deter them not only from using existing weapons, but to the extent possible, try to dissuade them from building dangerous new capabilities in the first place.
This is part classic deterrence, part arms race, and provides some insight into why the Bush administration disdains arms control treaties. The idea is to maintain enough nuclear weapons so that other nations will be discouraged from pursuing nuclear weapons of their own. They couldn't possibly think they could outmatch the United States. The same logic applies in part to the administration's pursuit of national missile defense, which intensified after the terrorist attacks. If the U.S. builds a missile defense system, administration officials argue, other nations, such as the Axis of Evil States, will decide it's a waste of money to try to acquire missiles capable of reaching the United States. The problem with this, says Jan Lodal, former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense and author of The Price of Dominance, is that the United States runs the risk of appearing as if it intends to seek a permanent role of global military dominance for itself.
If we have nuclear forces, which are the ultimate weapons, that could, at a moment's notice, destroy any other nation, and we have ballistic missile defenses, which could mop up, if you will, any residual response against our nuclear attack. If that's just our goal, the rest of the world could see the United States as having a strategy, a grand strategy, of pursuing absolute dominance. And it doesn't make any difference how much we deny that that's our strategy. The rest of the world will see us that way.
Good morning and welcome. Bonjour et bienvenue. Dobro jutro e dobro pozdravljat. Buongiorno e benvenuti. Colleagues, I'm delighted to convene this meeting today of the heads of state and government of the NATO countries and Russia.
After the summit in Russia, President Bush traveled to an airbase outside Rome, where he listened to NATO's Secretary General Lord Robertson open an extraordinary gathering of the 19 NATO heads of state plus Russia. NATO has been trying to improve relations with Russia for years with little success. The attacks of September 11th prompted President Putin to align Russia more firmly with the United States and NATO. The Bush administration sought Russia's help in the war in Afghanistan and continues to work with Moscow in the very expensive effort to prevent terrorists from getting their hands on nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons, vast stockpiles of which are spread throughout Russia. The expansion of cooperation with Russia and the possible enlargement of NATO later this year is going to change the alliance, too. It will make it even harder for all members to reach agreement on military operations outside NATO's borders. So even as the Bush administration works to expand America's most important military alliance, the result may still mean maximum flexibility for the United States in the use of military force in the post-September 11th period. Joseph Nye, the dean of the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, agrees.
NATO doesn't have to fight with all 19 countries at the same time, either supplying troops or making decisions. Sometimes it will fight in coalitions that are smaller than 19, sometimes with coalitions that are larger than 19. I think this idea that we have to either go alone or fight at 19 is a mistaken view.
When it comes to military power, the United States dwarfs all others, including the NATO allies. With the big jump in defense spending in the 2003 budget, the U.S. will spend more on the military than the next 15 largest spenders combined. No other nation can project power around the world. No other nation has a comparable navy. No other nation can come close to the air power of the United States. The United States is the dominant military power now and for the foreseeable future, says Gideon Rose, managing editor of the journal Foreign Affairs.
The rise of a peer competitor is almost unimaginable. It will not happen for many years, if not many decades. So the notion that we have to have a policy of trying to prevent the emergence of such another power is no longer really an issue.
In the past, some members of the Bush administration have written that the United States should pursue an explicit policy of maintaining its dominance in the world and prevent any rival powers from emerging, either singly or in alliance with one another. The administration certainly does not advocate such a policy publicly. Whether it or future administrations will evolve an explicit policy of global dominance is unknown. But Joseph Nye of Harvard says the United States must decide how it will exercise power in the world because it is the dominant power now.
I have no complaint about American dominance if we use our power wisely, use it in a way which is attractive to others and co-opts others into our view of the world. I think the danger is that when you make American power a goal in and of itself, and you define it in ways which doesn't include the interests of others, you run the risk of alienating them and giving them an incentive to gang up against you.
There are some in the Bush administration who seem to share that view, among them Secretary of State Powell. But the attacks of September 11th have focused the attention of many in the Bush administration on the unanticipated threats, on the surprises, as Defense Secretary Rumsfeld so often talks about.
We have to recognize that it is an uncertain world. It is not only an uncertain world, it is a world that, besides promising surprise and promising little or no warning, is a world that has weapons of mass destruction. So the penalty for not being able to cope with surprise can be enormous.
The issue then for President Bush is, what is the best way to prepare for these surprises, terrorist or otherwise, and their enormous potential costs? This question, more than anything, is determining the choices that the administration is making and the way it is exercising American power and American dominance in the world that September 11th left in its wake. Mike Schuster, NPR News, Washington.